Well, viewers and listeners, we're here with a very exciting guest this week, Mr. Preston Manning, well known to, I would say, all Canadians, or very few. They must be living under a rock if they don't know who Preston Manning is. Thank you, Mr. Manning, for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
And I am going to give you, for those who don't know too much about Mr. Manning, they know his name, but maybe don't know everything about him. Here's a little snapshot of some of the things he's done, and then we're going to get around to talking about the National Citizens Inquiry that he is launching. So Mr. Manning was born in 1942. Preston Manning is the second son of longtime Alberta Premier Ernest C. Manning. Growing up in a household which was both political and evangelical, he became intimately familiar with the political and religious experience of Western Canada, including its extensive and largely positive experience with populist movements, parties, and governments. Mr. Manning served as a member of Parliament from 1993 to 2001. He founded two, not one, but two political parties, the Reform Party of Canada and the Canadian Reform Conservative Alliance, both of which became the official opposition in the Canadian Parliament and laid the foundation for the Conservative Party of Canada, the CPC. In 2006, the CPC formed a minority federal government under Stephen Harper, originally elected as a reformer, and in 2010, the CPC formed a majority government. Mr. Manning served as leader of the opposition from 1997 to 2000 and was also his party's science and technology critic. In 2007, he was made a Companion of the Order of Canada, and in 2013, he was appointed to the Privy Council. Mr. Manning graduated from the University of Alberta with a BA in economics. He provided consulting services to the energy industry for 20 years before entering the political arena. He has received honorary degrees from 8 Canadian universities and is the author of 4 books, The New Canada, Think Big, Faith, Leadership, and Public Life, and most recently, Do Something, 365 Ways You Can Strengthen Canada. We may talk a little bit about this book. I'm privileged to have a copy that I got from Mr. Manning at the what used to be the Manning Conference, now is called Strong and Free. After leaving Parliament in 2001, Mr. Manning founded 2 nonprofit organizations, the Manning Foundation for Democratic Education and the Manning Foundation for and the Manning Center for Building Democracy. These organizations offer research, educational, and communication services designed to strengthen Canadian democracy. Boy, do we need that today. Canadian Confederation and the contributions thereto by conservative-oriented participants. In 2019, Mr. Manning began the process of retirement. I don't think you're quite there yet, Preston, but the networking and conferencing functions of the Manning Center being assumed by the Canada Strong and Free Network. The Manning Foundation continues to support Mr. Manning's writing and political mentoring activities and to publish the conservative-oriented electronic journal C2C. And that is also a great journal. We were fortunate to pick up some copies of that while we were at the conference in Ottawa this spring, and appreciate their work as well, those that work with you in that organization. So again, real privilege and honor to have you with us today. And when I say you haven't reached retirement yet, I know you're moving cattle, or you're waiting for the weather so you can move cattle. And you also have just launched the National Citizens Inquiry. And that's so critical for people to understand what that's about. So that's the main thing we're going to get to. But I'd like to ask you a couple of short questions, if I could, first, before we go there.
Sure.
One, what was it like growing up in the household of Ernest C. Manning? He's an icon in Canada, and in a few words, what happened as a child there?
Well, I sort of got exposed to politics and government, although in those days, political people tended to keep the family separate from the political. They didn't use the family as a, you know, here's my lovely wife, here's my kids, vote for me. they tried to keep it separate. So it really didn't affect us much as my father was raised on a homestead in Saskatchewan, and I always believed you should have land. So even when he was premier, we had a dairy farm about a half an hour northeast of Edmonton. So I went to a country school, and Horse Hill High School, and it didn't seem to create much of an impression on them that I came from a political family. And then, of course, he had a our family had a Christian commitment, and that was a very strong thing inculcated into me when I was a youngster. So
your father was well known as a preacher as well, right?
Well, he took William Eberhard pioneered religious, well, basically pioneered radio broadcasting in Western Canada, and he put on this religious program from the Bible Institute in Calgary, and my father went there as a student, and he carried that radio ministry on after Eberhard died, even when my father was premier.
So when did you first sense that you were destined to get involved in politics? Was that
I didn't really set out that way. I started out in physics at university, and I found I couldn't handle the math, so I went into economics, where you can make the math work by changing the assumption. And then I went into management consulting business for about 20 years, although I always had the political interest. And but then in the late 1980s, when I felt there was a need for something new and different, I had a background that made it fairly easy to pursue that goal. But I never started out with that particular goal in mind.
Yeah, interesting. And when you launched the Reform Party, that was in order to bring change, because you saw there was a need to shake up the establishment. Apparently, I don't know, put words in your mouth, but I that's sort of how I see it, that the big parties had become fairly entrenched at that time, and you thought they needed a new voice there. You started on the outside, but you didn't stay outside. Your party ended up becoming, over the years, a major player. You became leader of Her Majesty's Loyal Opposition. And here's just one question, and I know you have good answers for this, or I wouldn't ask it. As opposition leader, what did you do to bring attention to the burden on taxpayers from excessive government spending?
The Reform Party, one of its main themes when it started was the balancing the budget. In those days, as today, the expenditures were out of control. You had a growing deficit, you had a growing debt, even under the Progressive Conservatives, under Brian Mulroney, even under a Conservative Party. So one of our big themes was to press for budget balancing. And the Liberals under Jean Chrétien in those days were, Chrétien himself was quite pragmatic. He was not a philosophical person, and the Liberal Party wasn't committed to balancing the budget. But when Reform got to 2.5 million votes in the election, pounding away on that theme, I think the pollster went to Chrétien and said, maybe you better balance the budget. And Chrétien said, I guess we better balance the budget.
That was one of our
main themes, yes.
Yes, so you got his attention. So we'll come to the main theme. There, I would love to talk to you about some of these other things for hours. But last week you launched the National Citizens Inquiry, and I saw the announcement you made in Ottawa, and the press coverage of that, which was very good. CPAC did a good job of recording your announcement. Give us an overview of the National Citizens Inquiry, what your vision is, and what you hope to accomplish with that.
Yeah, well, I'm basically a sort of a spokesperson for it. There's a lot of people behind that. The COVID-19 experience was just unprecedented in Canada, the extent of the virus, but also the health protection measures that were adopted to cope with it. And a large number of people, I've heard from a large number of people, say there ought to be an independent national inquiry into what went right, what went wrong, And most importantly, what lessons can be learned from it that would help better manage a national crisis in the future. So a couple of us set up this website, nationalcitizensinquiry.ca, and encourage people to go and visit their nationalcitizensinquiry.ca. And one of the questions that's asked there, do you want national inquiry? And to this date, some 20,000 people have said yes, and we expect more. So this is basically a response to a large number of people want to see an inquiry. And this thing is to be citizen-led. There's been discussions on should the government have a royal commission or a commission under the Public Inquiries Act. And that's one thing they could do, but they tend to have been resistant to that. And then people are suspicious anyway, because this would involve a government or governments investigating themselves. And so there'd be a credibility challenge there. So the idea behind this is that this should be citizen-led. And one of the other requests on that website is asking people, who would you trust to conduct such an inquiry? Who would you trust as commissioners? And we're collecting names along that line, and we'll investigate those folks and try to come up with five commissioners to conduct this inquiry. This website will be live, and basically inviting that kind of response for November and December. But the idea is then is to hold these hearings across the country. These would be public hearings, probably 2 to 3 days, in-person hearings, virtual participation, and in January, February, early March, concluding with a final hearing in Ottawa, and then these commissioners being expected to produce a report basically on what they heard, what went right, what went wrong, but most importantly, what would they recommend to better handle these things in the future? Yeah. So that's kind of in a capsule what it's about.
Great. Well, and you're going to be holding hearings, like you said, across the country, both coasts and points in between, so that citizens...
Yeah, the current planning, and it's partly dependent on how much support... These hearings will have to be organized by local people, so it's very, very important we get volunteers to do this, but the current plan is to have one in for Atlantic Canada, in Moncton, in Montreal for Quebec, in Toronto for Ontario, in Winnipeg for Manitoba, and Red Deer for Saskatchewan, Alberta, and Victoria for BC, and then, as I say, end up in Ottawa probably in late March.
And it's one of the primary goals from your site, and from what I've heard you say in other interviews, is to investigate the harms, give people an opportunity to speak about the harms that they suffered as a result of some of the COVID.
Yes, yeah. If folks go to that website, there's a couple of backgrounders there. One is an opinion survey that was done in the middle of October, in which 74% of Canadians said that they were harmed by these health protection measures. Now, this isn't talking about being harmed by COVID-19. There were people who were harmed by that, and there's statistics on that. But this is 74% of Canadians saying they were harmed by the health protection measures. And there were four categories of harms. There were people that said that they were, their health was harmed, either the people on the waiting lines, or people had relatives die on the waiting lines because the Canadian system couldn't handle the surge increase, and people that suffered harms from the vaccines. And then there was the rights and freedoms, people's rights and freedoms being circumscribed. There was those harms. And then there was the social harm from social distancing. In fact, when people were asked, which of these four categories of harms affected you and your family most seriously, the social harms from social distancing came up on top. And then the fourth category was the economic harms. And so we expect people to testify at these hearings as to what these harms were. But and I can't prejudge what the commissioners will ask, but if I was one of them, I would then ask, okay, we've heard the negative side, we've heard the harms. What would you propose could have been done different so that you didn't suffer those harms? And I think that's one of the answers to that question will produce one of the main results of this hearing if it's conducted right.
No, very, very good. Do you know in that poll how many Canadians responded to that?
Well, no, this is a representative sample. These are 1,500. There's pollsters that do these, as you know, all the time. And we managed to ask one of them to tack a couple of these questions on. Usually a 1,500, a sample properly drawn across the country is representative. These results are good within 3 or 4%. They're not 100% accurate, but they give, and there's breakdowns between the different regions. In some regions felt that one harm was more serious than the other.
Yeah.
When people were asked a second question about which of these harms do you think affected the largest number of Canadians, which ones affected the country as distinct from just you and your family,
yeah,
the economic harms came up on the top when that question was asked.
Very, very significant economic harms. I mean, we're going to be a long time recovering from this, and we'll need certainly some change in government in order to recover at all. These requests for suggestions for commissioners, have you got some names coming in already?
There's names coming in, and it's interesting. There's sort of two opinions on this. Some people suggest that the main qualification for being a commissioner is their objectivity, that they be more like a retired judge, that they're not connected closely to the government or to one position or another.
Yeah.
So there's that, looking for people like that, who are pretty rare. The other suggestion is that, no, you've got to have people on your panel who have expertise. I mean, this is a medical thing. This is a legal, there's a civil rights aspect to it. There's economic and social aspects. So you're going to have expertise on that panel. So I think what may happen is that maybe the chief commissioner will be somebody that's more objective and sort of distanced from things, but the other members of the panel will represent expertise in those areas. But we do have to get names, and so far there's some, but we're going to have to get a lot more.
I heard the question was asked to you in the press conference, you know, about how it's going to be received. Will people see it as a neutral, an actual fact gathering commission, or whether there will be a bias to it? And you had a good answer, and you probably have a good answer today for that question.
Well, I say we'll do everything we can to make it objective. And what I say to people who are suspicious of that, then why don't you apply to testify? If you think it's skewed, or if you think what someone else has testified is skewed, or you think it's misinformation, then don't just stand back and judge it, participate yourself. But two qualification or two conditions you should understand. One is you'll testify under oath. We'll have a commissioner of oaths there, so you'll be required to affirm that what you're saying is the truth, the whole yeah. truth, and nothing but the truth. And secondly, you'll be subject to cross-examination. Everyone will be subject to cross-examination. And hopefully that will help to guarantee the objectivity, or that both sides or three sides of an issue will be presented, not just one.
Yeah, right now, today, there is the Public Order Emergency Commission taking place. And it's quite different. Number one, it's run by the government, or it was commissioned by the government, and maybe directed, guided, and handpicked by the government. But secondly, it's very much focused on the Emergency Act, the issuance of the Emergency Act. And, you know, some think it should have been more focused on what happened before the truckers' convoy, because there was certainly damage done. And that your inquiry is going to pick up on that. Are there any other, you see any other thing that needs to be addressed in terms of comparing the two?
The emergencies one is very is focused on one particular incident, and undoubtedly that'll come up at this citizens hearing, the freedom convoy, the economic damage that was done by to the truckers, et cetera, et cetera. But what we're envisioning is something much broader than that emergency. And as I say, not commissioned by the government, so that it won't just be directed by the government.
Yeah. So anything else that you think we haven't covered that people of Canada
no, should... Well, the main thing I'd say to your viewers and listeners, if they're concerned about this at all, is to go to that website and help to contribute, because the credibility of this will depend on a couple of things. One is the number of people that say, yes, we want an inquiry. It's going to get its authority partly from that. Secondly, it'll get its credibility from the nature and character of these commissioners. So it's extremely important to get to who would you trust to do this and to follow up on that. And then thirdly, its credibility will rest on who testifies at that hearing. And people that are willing to do one or all of those things, that will help move this thing along.
Yeah, well, I'm very excited and very grateful to you for launching this and taking the initiative, you and others working with you, to get this going. And that's why it's clear that you have not reached retirement yet, but you're still serving the people of Canada. So nationalcitizensinquiry.ca is the website. And aside from asking people to make suggestions of for commissioners, there's also a donate button there, and that's important.
Yes, this has to be financed by people. And again, one thing that'll help the credibility of it is it's far better to get small amounts of money from large numbers of people than to get a big donation from just a few. So again, I think people can help create the objectivity of it by making a small donation to that and through that site. We incorporated a federal not-for-profit company to receive the funds and to expend them on the expenditures that will be necessary, and also looking for donations in kind. If someone will donate the facility for having these hearings, for example, that would all help. So we're hoping it can all come together.
Well, very good. Preston Manning, what a treat to have a chance to chat with you about this. We look forward to hearing more about it, and we hope that it gets fair coverage in the news. It was, you know, fairly good, your press conference. I think you carried it off well, and hopefully the national media would show an interest in this, because
when they ask us about will this be fair and objective, I say, oh, certainly it'll be just as fair as the CBC and the editorial page of the Toronto Star and the political science department. We've got these great models of objectivity to copy, so we'll try to do that and even do better.
Well, I think it won't be hard to do better, because they're certainly lacking that kind of integrity and credibility right now in the existing national media that are financed by taxpayers through the government, largesse. And so it's so important what you're doing. Thank you for joining us today. Folks, be sure to check this out at nationalcitizensinquiry.ca and chip in a little bit to help make this a success. And if you think of someone that should be a commissioner that you would trust and that others would trust, by all means, send that name in. And Mr. Manning and others will take your comments seriously, because he cares about people. I noticed that always throughout your career, your political career, you've always trusted the citizens. That's been kind of a hallmark of your vision. And so we thank you for, and you regard yourself not only as a politician, but as a citizen yourself. And I think that's the spirit in which you're launching this as a concerned citizen of Canada. So again, thank you, Preston.
Okay,
Manning.
Thank you very much.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.